Well, it's point-to-point week. The weather is looking like it's going to be good, which kind of determines the vibe of the day.
Really
We've also
does.
Discussed with the course adjustments they've been forced to make, it's also probably an easier course than last year, is your thought?
I think it's going to be an easier course than usual.
I think a lot of parents listening to this are going to do it. How many kids do it? Because it's tricky where it's in the middle of the NICA season.
I'm not aware of very many kids doing
this.
It.
Is one
I know,
more,
I know there's a few post-NICA riders
more
doing
post-NICA
it.
And parents doing
which I don't really recommend not people do point-to-point during their NICA
yeah.
season. I think
that's a lot.
You can do that till you're 70. You can only do NICA.
Yeah, focus on NICA for now. Okay.
But yeah, we usually have a pretty decent group do
okay.
it. I'm super excited. I am excited because this summer's been awful. Like, it hasn't rained pretty much at all.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to get like a few days of rain leading up to point, which is going to help a ton. And the temperatures are going to be in the 70s.
Currently reporting, I think when I checked a little bit ago, I mean, we're a week out, so it's going to adjust.
I saw somewhere like 71, but I've seen up to 75.
Let's see. It's currently saying 69. Nice. That was mature, huh? I bet it gets adjusted upward. I'm thinking of probably a little less rain than we're thinking. It might get up to 80. But here's the thing. Even if it gets up to 80.
That's not too bad.
That's manageable.
One year it was around 100. And that was like one of the most miserable.
That's like dangerous.
Yeah. It was awful.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm super excited. And I've actually been, this has been kind of a humbling year for me. I haven't ever felt really strong on the bike for some reason. Lately, I've been feeling really, really good. Which obviously means I've peaked early and I'm going to be garbage next week. But
there you go.
I've actually had, so Amy Larkin's really good at showing up for her key events in peak form.
Yeah.
And I asked her for some advice on peaking for this, and I'm doing some of the things, and I feel really good. So
what's the magic? Is this a trade secret? Can you share?
Well,
is it have she, Larkin jeans?
Actually, yeah, that part. One thing she said that was kind of funny is I wasn't allowed to ride with Brady the week of the race.
Because your friends are bad influences.
Because apparently that's too hard for me.
Yeah.
But
apparently, yes. that does seem apparent to me. Yes.
Yeah, but she's had me kind of ease up for about 3 weeks leading up to it.
There you go.
And so, we'll...
I've kind of been forced to ease up for the past couple of weeks, and then this week I'm going to do... Actually, really quick, because we have so much stuff, but maybe for the people racing point to point, if I could ask, what do you do from here to Saturday, and then what is your big basic advice for actually getting through the day? Because I know we have a lot of other stuff. Maybe to spend 2 minutes on this.
No, that's a great question, because obviously you're not going to gain a whole lot of fitness this week.
Well, you can't... You can't gain fitness between today and Saturday. Am I wrong in saying that?
Not enough that's going to offset the fatigue that you're going to accumulate.
Okay, so you are who you are at this point.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so you really don't want to go into it with excess fatigue, but you don't want to go into it rusty either.
Yeah.
So keep riding your bike. If you ride your bike every day, I'd keep riding your bike every day, but just make it dead easy. Like a short... So this week, basically my riding is going to consist of short rides, which an hour and a half is short for me.
Okay.
And I'm going to do it at point to point pace, which is really pretty easy for me.
Okay. Are you going to ride 5 days up to?
I might take a couple days off. I'll try to get like three easier hour and a half, pretty easy rides.
Mm-hmm.
Just so I don't get like heavy legs, just so I can keep the blood circulating. And
I will say, you might disagree with me because I like extremes, right? I almost feel like if you didn't ride at all between today and Saturday, like it's a 9 to 11 or 12 hour race, or an 8 to kind of 10, 11 hour race for most people. Like, even if you came into it with rusty legs, are your legs still going to be rusty at hour 4? Like, I don't know. That's like a week worth of riding for some people. And maybe that leads me into the second question. But I did point to point for the first time last year, and I feel that it was manageable. I think it felt, I was more scared for it than I think I should have been upon finishing. And I feel like I ate enough and paced well, and like ate enough and didn't blow up basically. And so it was okay. If someone's listening to this, who's doing point to point for the first time, What's your advice?
Well, I think the best advice is you don't race point to point. Very few people can race it.
Like Xander could probably race it.
Yeah.
Of the people who, I know Xander's doing it.
Most people are just trying to ride it and complete it.
Yeah, Riker and Xander versus you and I. I mean, you may be shooting for a time.
Yeah, place, and you're not shooting for a place. It's okay if people pass you.
Yeah.
You know, my mantra for this race is going to be don't be stupid.
Yeah.
I think that starting easy pays dividends at the end.
So when you say easy, like maybe for someone with heart rate or power, do you have kind of a cap where it's like, don't, cause there are some sections where you have to go hard to get up it. Right. But when you have the ability to stay below zone, I mean, try to stay in zone two basically. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
Like for those of you with heart rate and power, you know that it would be impossible to do this above that, or else that means your zones are set wrong, right? Like,
yeah, because I do race it with a power meter, and I kind of like try to keep it below a certain point as much as possible.
Okay.
I think eating is the biggest key. I've kind of like, I even in my notes and my phone, I've kind of come up with my eating plan, and I've kind of thought it through. And
yeah.
Yeah, I would say though, yeah, just start a little bit easier than you think you need to. And the worst thing that's going to happen is that you have a little extra energy to spend climbing Armstrong and
last year,
Ironman.
My start was rough. I didn't actually start with my group. I was, I think, the last person to actually roll through. Like the last group was gone and I rolled through the line. And so I had to work through a bunch of people, but it almost ended up being a blessing because it really forced me to stay at a really modest pace up till, I mean, really kind of the first aid station is when I kind of felt like I'd passed all the people that I needed to pass like right away.
And weren't you getting like PRs on Armstrong or something?
No, I didn't PR Armstrong, but like I kind of did like, if I went on a normal ride up Armstrong, I kind of got like that sort of time. Like I got to Armstrong and Andrew rode with me for the last third. And I told Andrew, I'm like, I'm going to push a bit and see how I feel. And I pushed for 10 minutes. I'm like, I feel great. Like, let's go. And I got all the way to like the very end of the climb at UOP almost. And then I crammed. But at that point I was descending. So like I will tell you guys, for me last year, I made sure to get at least 60 grams of carb an hour. And I paced really, really well. And I got to the end of point to point and it was unbelievably hard, right? It's a big, hard day, but like, you know, I had talked to people who had described it as like a traumatic experience that they would truly never want to do again. It was horrible. I was like, wow, that felt like a really big day on the bike. And I probably could have shaved off a bit of time, but like my point to point last year went about as well as I think it could have. And I think I ate enough and I didn't blow up. And I think most people who have a really bad day at point to point mess up on one of those two counts.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some really, really fit people that blow up.
Yeah.
And there's some people that aren't as fit that just eat well and pace well and do just fine.
Yeah. I mean, I listened to like a whole book, you know, I was almost like a road trip in some ways. Right. But I was really religious about, had the timer on my Garmin, eat as much as I can when I can. The Scratch High Carb, again, not sponsored by Scratch. Scratch High Carb was kind of the magic thing for me that just allowed me to get enough calories in my body that I didn't pop. And then
it's easy on people's tummies for long.
Yeah. 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 But so best of luck if you're going to do it.
And I was just going to say, as far as this week leading up to it, I am going to go on some easy rides just to keep my legs moving. And, I just feel better when I do. And I think most people are that way.
I agree.
But I think probably the biggest thing is I'm just going to try to eat really, really good food all week.
Yep.
I'm going to eat plenty, but it's going to be good quality stuff.
Yeah. Get lots of sleep, recover well.
Yeah. And try to get like an extra hour of sleep each night.
Yep. 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 Yep.
And I'm going to carb load, like starting Thursday, I'm going to eat a lot of beans and rice and
pasta, all that good stuff. Cool.
Yeah. So
best of luck to those of you who are doing it. If you're doing it for the first time, it's a cool, and I want to say it's a cool thing. It's a cool thing to have in your backyard. I actually think point to point is underrated on the endurance scene right now. I think point to point's way the heck cooler than a lot of these gravel races that all these, you know, bike companies are wetting their pants over. Like, I don't understand why point to point isn't a bigger deal than it is.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw out, it's an unbelievably cool, almost totally unique event.
And that's something like when you're riding it, you should really just think about how hard it is to make like each foot of trail.
Yeah.
and how much trail you're covering in one day.
And how various it is that you almost start in this like sort of deserty round valley, kind of high desert sort of feel. And then you move into like unbelievably scenic alpine riding up on 9K that you get to ride. Like you get to descend Johns and the variety that you get to see. And then like the last third, which nobody ever rides back there, is you know, it's a really cool, it's cool that like I live, I'm going to start and finish the day of Point to Point in my bed. That's unbelievable that mm-hmm. I can do that and lay my head down to sleep in the same place I do right before I'm going to go to work the next day. Like that's a cool thing. So thanks to the folks who put it on. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I'm excited for it.
Very cool. So, Nika, lots of Nika stuff.
Yeah, lots of Nika stuff.
Let's begin the shout outs. As always, well, standard disclaimer, if we miss you, let us know. We realized, actually, maybe we want to start. I don't know if we want to start here. Well,
and I did have some people help me be aware of some cool things that happened, which I yeah. really do appreciate.
Yes, genuinely, because there are like 100 to 200 people a week that we need to think about, and we can't get all of them. So
Paisley Argyle is a girl from Bountiful, and she rides with just this coolest group of girls out there in Bountiful, and they're just killing it, all of them. Just such an amazing, and Amy got to coach their
lucky
group
them.
And I helped Amy's group. So I got to know some of these girls, and I actually just talked to Paisley's dad, and he didn't tell me to shout it out. He was just telling me what happened. I thought it was kind of cool, and I thought it'd be kind of fun to share. But, so at her race at Snow Basin, you kind of go up that steep climb, and then you kind of cross this bridge into that flat area. Then the climb goes up again.
Yeah.
I guess her tire got buzzed or something, and she fell off the bridge, but her front tire fell off and bent the front rotor, like landed on the bridge and bent it to the point that the wheel barely, it took some effort to turn the wheel.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a lot of times kids will get a rotor that's a little warped and it makes a sound, and it might slow you down a little bit, but this was like the wheel would barely spin.
Yeah.
And she was struggling. She finished the race.
So we didn't fix this rotor
and she didn't really know exactly what was up. She just knew she was having a bad race.
So I want to say really quick, that is probably robbing 50 to 100 watts, and a lot of Nika racers, that's like the majority of their FTP. And, like that's an insane, I probably would pull out of a race if I had.
I think a lot of people I know people that have pulled out of races
for much less.
No, because their brake rotor is making a noise,
just rubbing,
and like
the psychological toll of I'm losing 5 watts is too much to handle. This is insane.
Yeah, like, and she finished race. She did really pretty well, but I think the cool thing about it was she was having a bad race, but just kept pushing through, and. And that's kind of why I wanted to share that story, is I'm like, you know, not all races go well, but I think it's so cool when a kid can be strong enough to keep pushing through. And another one, that same race was, well, and we didn't talk about it much last week, but Andrew Preston, you know, his bike stopped shifting during the race.
Oh, I heard about this.
And he was basically single speeding it.
Now, of all the races you could have to single speed, Snow Basin's a rough one.
Yeah.
That's not ideal.
And so I just think these kids that are able to like both of those riders, it would have been totally acceptable for them to,
I would have,
to DNF.
Yeah. Like if you're ever going to DNF, that's like an actual legit. Can I throw out, I think that like when you win a race or when you have a good performance, that speaks to your training and to the effort you've put in and stuff. And that's great. I think when you finish a race in circumstances like that, says something about your like soul and your character, which I think is really cool. Like I think in a funny way, like I think these kids probably don't even understand how tough they are, and they're not like trying to be tough. They're just doing that because that's what they do, and that's cool.
I think it's just so cool.
Bravo to them. Bravo to their parents too for doing a good job. That's wild. You know, wild stuff.
You know, and then I want to talk a little bit too about like my own daughter, Amy, just because like she had a bad race at Snow Basin, because she kind of took the summer off. You know, when she was dating Cole, she rode a lot. her new boyfriend doesn't ride, so she kind of stopped riding as much. And you know, and she like she threw up on the start, which she normally doesn't do. That's kind of unique for her. Anyhow, just had an awful race. Like, and the whole race, I'm just like, well, this might be our last Nike race together. Yes. I'm kind
of
like,
Amy's more of a free thinker than the other Draper children were. I feel like we would never even have considered it. But Amy's like, oh wait, this is definitely optional. I don't have to do this.
And I was really worried after that race, she was going to give up, and I was kind of almost preparing myself for it, but she finished discouraged, but positive. And I think it was actually kind of a good wake up call because like,
yeah,
you know, last week she was riding her bike and she texted me the other day and wants to wonder if I could take her out to Harriman to pre-ride. And, you know,
I will say this is a thing that happens sometimes. I think sometimes talented kids get this where like you're always pretty good and that you assume that being good is just part, just it's a thing that's in your DNA. And then you're like, oh no, like you still have to put the work in. And I've said before that like this sport is not equitable. There are some people who are going to get better returns on investment in terms of the effort they put in and the results they get. But like, you know, parents, don't be discouraged. If you've got a kid who, for whatever reason, you know, like this happens a lot. This is like, Amy is not the first kid we've seen have this like, oh, okay. Well, I do want, you know, okay. Well, I got to, yeah. Like, you know.
Yeah. And talent doesn't get you very far unless you put in a lot of work.
Yeah. No, that's true too.
Yeah. I mean, work is just an amplifier of talent, but
yeah,
there are some kids that definitely have a little bit more talent, but I've seen some really talented kids not get very far because they don't work.
Yeah.
And you know, they may be awesome to a certain point, but you're not going to get to these top levels unless there's a lot of work too. There's just no exceptions there. So yeah. And then, so we've had a couple other riders I want to shout out that have been injured. The first is, I don't know, the Schmid family, I guess he is from Sweden.
Mm.
Switzerland. Sorry. I get those.
Yeah, they do both start with the same letter. Yeah, this episode of Sesame Street is brought to you by the letter S. Does he like spaghetti?
I'm going to go off topic. I remember one time.
Already. It's okay.
I was talking to Christoph Heinrich.
Uh-huh. Who's from which one, Dan?
He's from Switzerland.
Nailed it.
Like the Schmids.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him, so do you eat a lot of Swedish fish?
Oh, dude.
And he's like, no, that is a different place.
Oh, because here's the thing, like Austria and Australia really do kind of sound alike. Sweden and Switzerland share like one sound. Do you think he's from Saturn? Like what's that sounds as similar as those. Okay, whatever.
Okay, anyhow.
Anyway, he's from the chocolate one, not the IKEA one.
Yes.
Swiss chocolate.
Yes.
Okay. Hey, there you go.
Uh-huh. Not the fish one.
Okay. We are just, if you're listening to this, we are
this horrendously. Is probably the worst shout out anyone's ever
heard. This is the most disgustingly ignorant thing anyone's ever heard. We are American maxing right now.
no, but Maddie is just an awesome rider. Like I get to ride with her. She was in our Skyline group that I get to ride with.
Mm-hmm.
And just one of the neatest people you'll ever meet. She is so classy, so cool, so kind, and just so fun to talk with, and just really, really getting super strong and super fast. She crashed on the pre-ride at Snow Basin, and I think broke her elbow.
Oh, wow. Okay. So like a really,
yeah. And she'll be out for a few races, which is a huge bummer. Cause she was in some pretty good form. She was going to have a really good season.
Like I said, when you only get to do Nike once, it really does suck to miss it you kind of get your one shot at Nike and that's it.
But it was cool because she came to the race and she was there from like sun up to sundown.
Wow.
And cheered every single race on.
Wow.
You know,
that's like moving. I love that.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Such a good person. So cool. Another one, this was kind of like Fisher Riddell, who has done some big races this year. She's kind of a gravel rider, really kind of, but just putting in tons and tons of miles. She's one of Kyson's athletes, had been on a lot of really big podiums for big endurance races, was probably just going to crush the whole Nika thing.
Yeah.
She broke a collarbone.
I saw that.
And just, you know, bummer. But she's had just an awesome attitude about it. And so I'm hoping, you know, I was thinking like maybe, you know, if we look in the forecast and see some rain in the forecast, we should plan like a group Zwift ride and get these girls to ride.
I do want to start getting that going again soon. I love that.
Yeah. Like if there's some bad weather, we better get these guys doing a Zwift ride together. So yesterday I went out to Harriman, and I've never been to a race at Harriman before. It was Division 3 was racing out there today. And I'm like, you know, I know a lot of these kids out there. I want to go check it out.
Yeah.
And so I drove out there. It was kind of nice going to Nike race without having to bring a bike or bring anything.
Purely spectating. Have you ever done that before?
No, I haven't. This is my first time ever just going to spectate a Nike race before. And it was really cool. It was just so awesome because I got there and I just knew so many people, and so many people were just being so nice to me and saying hi. And it was just a good, good day. It was super fun. Our racers, we had some just really, really awesome results out there. The varsity race, Hunter Cottom he was just super strong.
It's Hunter's world, and we're just living in it. Like I don't think that's a surprise. I mean,
he's had a really consistent season. I think he might have set the course record, was kind of what I overheard the announcer saying. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe someone could fact check me on that. Way to go. That was awesome.
Not a surprise, but like,
Calvin.
Yes. Okay. So Calvin, Calvin crushed it.
Yeah. Calvin crushed it. And my gosh, he's looking so fit.
Yeah.
He just looked so well-defined and just,
he's thrown his heart into Nika this year.
Had a fantastic race. Super proud of Calvin.
Yeah.
Way to go, Calvin.
And then third place.
Well, actually, Reese Tillman got fourth.
Uh-huh.
And Reese just had an awesome race. He was looking great out there. And he is just such a classy kid. He's so fun to be around.
Yeah.
Really just one of the most likable people you're ever going
to
meet.
I have to say, for all three of these dudes who are athletes at the top, they're also outstandingly classy bike riders. Like I rode Corey today. I had an unfortunate interaction with a mountain biker going down Corey today. He was in a full face helmet and had bad skills. And it was just like, I was feeling really kind of down about that. I was just like, oh my gosh, like there's some people in this community who are really messing things up. And I think Hunter and Calvin and Reese are like, seeing guys like that win races really does vindicate my view that like good mountain bikers are cool and nice, and there's a correlation between those two things.
And I'm not done there, because Davis Hinkley came in right after Reese.
No way, really?
Yeah, so we had four of our riders on the varsity podium,
that's just a class podium, cool. Man.
And it's funny you mentioned what you did just a second ago, because I did have a dad out there point out to me how classy and kind our fastest riders are.
Yep.
And it just meant so much to me hearing that, you know. And so, yeah, I'm glad really that somehow cool we've attracted that type of people.
Yeah.
So yeah, varsity boys just awesome. Another one I just really want to, a rider I'm just so proud of is Colin Delicious.
Oh my gosh. Colin was mine. I have to say, Colin's one of those people who make mountain biking look so cool. Like he was really fun to ride with last year. Talented technical rider. Like he just kind of has in basketball, like basketball IQ. He kind of has like the bicycle IQ. Like it just seems like he was born to ride a bike. He's been really fun to watch.
You know, and he's been putting in a lot of work. I think Gabe Nord is coaching him.
Yeah.
Putting in a lot of work, and my gosh, he has just improved so much. I mean, he had a great race out there too. And I can just see him just being like, an endurance king.
Oh my gosh.
You know, yeah. just yeah.
Well, it's cool for him because I want to say I think I'm correct in saying that like he had like reposted Hunter's like race post and stuff. Like he's like cheering on Maybird athletes on other high schools. And it is funny how the high school teams are all like we have all these kids racing for different high school teams, but it's like, you know,
they're all friends. There's not a whole lot of rivalry.
Yeah, I mean, you get to ride in a better or worse looking kit for these races, I guess. But like, it's cool. The Nike vibes are great.
His family's just so cool too.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, great, great people. So then the varsity girls race was super cool. Now this was just kind of just such a rewarding day for me because I was walking over as they were staging, and I knew like most of the girls staging in varsity. And it was just so cool to just know that many cool people and be able to see them all in one place together. Just loved it. And that was a super exciting race. Emma Daly won it, and Emma is just, gosh, she's just so consistent and just such an awesome, good, friendly, likable person. Yeah. She nails the being fast and being kind thing to a T. So she did awesome. The Abbott twins had a great race. It was funny, before their race, you know, I was trying to be all wise and helpful because they had to start, they petitioned up to varsity. They had to start at the back. And I told them, I'm like, you know what? It's a long course. There's lots of room for passing. It's a short start. You know, just be patient.
Be patient, right. Keep, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't listen to my advice. They got like right to the...
They worked for him.
They got right to the front, right on the start, and they rode with Emma the whole time. The three of them just kind of rode together the whole time, and
yeah,
finished first, second, and third. Super cool.
Kind of a Mappe Roubaix performance for my 90s cycling nerds.
Another girl I ride with for my pink girls, Nora Bostrom, came in fourth.
Very,
which
cool.
was a super cool result for her. Result
very, very
for her.
Cool.
Yeah, and Sam Shaw. Was
dang,
yeah, so
what a podium.
That's a sweep right there.
I feel I'm not to, like not taking away anything from our boys, because like, wow, like Hunter's awesome and those guys crushed it. I feel like possessive of the Maybird having the varsity girls thing on lock. I love that. I also want to say, I think when we have like twins crush Nike races, I think I think we should start to call that a Maybird special. That's like our thing. We have like we need to go seek out more twins.
Yeah, we need to go find all the fast twins.
Yeah, very, very cool.
Yeah, another cool race was the JVA race. Cole Fairbanks from Olympus. So I guess he thought there were three laps, but there were only two. So
okay.
So luckily he was ahead. Oh. When he won the race.
Oh my gosh.
And he comes through, and there's like, you know, either if you're lapping, you go to the left. If you're finishing, you go to the right. He just stayed to the left and kept crushing it. And he won, had no idea. People had to turn him around. And
did somebody just be like, hey, dude, how old?
He's younger. I can't remember how old he is, but he was one of the... I think he rode with Curtis Cordeau.
Oh, okay. So I have to throw it. I love watching boys that age race, because it's like you've got all the confidence, you've got all the fitness, you have some pretty impressive skills, but sometimes just like the judgment's not there, and they're like not fully on board with it. It's that's so funny to like win a race thinking there's a whole extra lap to go. That's hilariously funny. That is so 13-year-old boy wins at a bike race coded. I love that. I absolutely love it.
The JVA girls, that was an interesting race. There was a pretty good crash at the start, but Avery Larrabee won it by a bit.
How long has it been now that Larrabees have been throwing down at Nike races? That's another kind of dynasty.
Yeah, that's
huh?
kind of a dynasty, yeah. For sure. Want to shout out Hannah Banana.
Oh yeah,
she had a great race. And okay, there's just another family that is just so. Her dad is
the Banana
cool.
family. They're my favorite. The Banana.
And I got to say, they have really cool kits this year.
Which team is that?
It's like a granite composite. I can't remember. It's a composite out west somewhere.
Oh, cool.
Their kits were like Hawaiian floral, but
that like executed well.
They actually look really, really cool.
That's cool. No, I think we need to mix it up. If I have any critique of the Nika thing, it's that I think some of the kits are getting too safe, and I'm kind of glad to see some of the teams have branched out. We're trying some different stuff.
The kits are bold, but I really liked them.
Bold, because the best kits are almost always bold, but bold done well, because bold can also go the other direction.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, and then, so I didn't stay for all the races, but my buddy Spencer Brown reached out and told me about like the JVB race, the girls race. We had several of our, I think they were our gold girls group that was in that race. And I guess they all started kind of towards the back and were able to finish up towards the front. Like Caitlin Abbott, who's the younger sister of the twins, Mr. Call-Up started at the back and was able to finish way up towards the front. A lot of these girls climbed up a lot of spots, and Sky Gillespie was one of those. Jane Brown, those girls kind of kill it. So yeah, just lots of cool things happened at that race. There was, I think there were three Nika races going on one, which is pretty amazing.
That's wild. That's crazy.
And they really do kind of pull off a good quality race. And to think that that was happening in two other locations was crazy.
I'll say what I said last week. Nika has an impossible job. Yeah, I don't think they do everything right, but I also think they have, if you actually like zoom out and look at what we're asking them to do, it's almost hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, they're doing a better job than if I was running.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But up at Soldier Hollow, we had a bunch of girls racing up there. Really awesome. Did super well. Like Ainsley Haas won the race, which was tough because she was racing Aspen. So that's a good little, there's some good competition there. So both those girls are just awesome. Way to go. Hard work and consistency pays off. And yeah, we had several other girls out in that race. Not remembering any results off the top of my head, but
One more time again.
Yeah.
There are so, like, look, if you went and finished a Nika race, if you're a kid and you're doing mountain bike racing for fun and you finished, oh my gosh, you're cooler than 99% of people. Like, we can't, I wish we could call out everything. And I'm going to say for the next few weeks, it's going to be a really big, long front loaded news segments. We're at 33 minutes here. Like, but that's because, I mean, this is the payoff. For most kids, this is what they've been working for all year. So we want to call out as many as we can.
And again, the theme always is of that first Nika race is,
yep,
in most cases, those that have been, you know, that did some work during the winter, stayed aerobically fit during the winter, rode and stayed fit during the spring, rode through the summer, were consistent. Usually that's going to be a good day for
I'm ready to say universally. I think this sport, I think when I was doing it, you'd kind of get some people who were like, you know, like, especially in maybe sophomore or whatever, just like, oh, whoa, I'm kind of fit and I won this. Like that, even in the kind of like beginner divisions, it's just kind of a big enough thing now. Like enough people are doing it and the know-how's there. It's because it was also like back then it was like, there's kind of some know-how at Park City and Skyline and Corner Canyon and those teams kind of like now it kind of seems like it's become democratized and everyone kind of like, I'm ready to say like, do you think there are any kids who got top fives who haven't been
riding
year round and probably even winter? Like probably not at this point. It's just kind of the floor is a lot higher than it used to be.
But again, those that kind of took the summer off.
Yeah.
And probably aren't listening to this podcast.
Yeah, that's the problem.
just know that you can make a lot of improvements by the end of the season. And
how long is the next? Is it 8 weeks?
Yeah, it's about 8 weeks.
You can, like we said, I mean, we did a whole episode about this. Go back and listen to it. But like, you can make up a lot of ground in 8 weeks.
So
yeah. If we missed anything, let us know. We will definitely call it out.
Should we deep dive?
So deep dive today. We spend a lot of time.
Siri just answered.
Oh, hey Siri, how you doing? Okay. So anyway, we spend a lot of time talking about Zone 2, extolling the virtues of Zone 2. We joke that this is the Zone 2 podcast, but there are other rides that aren't Zone 2.
And we actually will talk about Zone 2 today.
Well, it comes up everywhere, right? It's the secret sauce, but
not necessarily.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Let me give you a segue. Get on the segue. Oh my gosh. Okay. Here's the segue. Get on it. But you have those, you know, we talk a lot about like, okay, and then when it's time to go, you go. That comes up in like the polarization episode. You told me today was kind of the key workouts. And when you say key workouts, you mean that twice a week that we talk about that isn't necessarily zone two, but of course zone two is there because it's...
Yeah, today basically I wanted to do kind of a deep dive into intervals, but I kind of like to call intervals key workouts
mm-hmm.
because they can kind of come in like different shapes and sizes and,
yeah.
you know.
If you're new to this, you might have an idea of what an interval is in your head and it's a complicated thing.
Yeah, there's, you know, and always keep in mind, there's like a billion ways to get fast. And
yes.
I really don't know what the best is, but.
Yeah, and you're asking us for some reason, so there you go.
So first of all, let's kind of talk about like intervals and why you do them and why they're good and all that. But first of all, I kind of put them into two classes, you know, when you're dealing with intervals. You've got your kind of your structured intervals, and then you've got kind of a more organic style of doing them. And there's advantages and disadvantages to doing them either way. So really what a structured interval is, all it is you're alternating periods of work and periods of rest.
Right.
And there's about a bazillion different combinations that you could do that to get kind of a desired outcome. The beauty of it is if I told you, okay, Joe, here's $1 million.
I'll do anything.
Okay.
There are shockingly few things I wouldn't do for $1 million, but carry on.
So here's $1 million. I want you to hold your VO2 max steady for 20 minutes without dipping below.
I don't, well, if my VO2 max is correctly set, then that is definitionally impossible. No. Am I on the right track here?
Well, I won't pick that statement apart, but, basically you can't do that.
No. Yeah. Basically, like if my VO2 max is actually my VO2 max, if I can do it, if you could do it for 20 minutes, it isn't your VO2 max, right? That's kind of what I'm trying to say. Okay.
Yeah. Cause your VO2 max is a condition that your body hits.
Right.
What you have it set at is.
Okay. But you get what I'm saying, right? Yeah. Like that's my,
but yeah, you really couldn't do that.
It is
the short
impossible.
Answer is no.
Yeah.
You couldn't.
It is impossible.
But if I had you go, you know, for 5 minutes, then rest for 5 minutes, then do 5 minutes again, then rest for 5 minutes.
And then do it two more times, and then that equals 20.
And that equals 20. Could you do that?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. So
not a fun day, but yes.
Yeah. So really that's all intervals are, is it's making it so you can complete more work because you're interrupting it and including rest.
Right. So why isn't this maybe a good question to get you? It's like, why isn't that a cheat code? Why does that work? Because in my head, it's like those two things are different, right? Like doing something for 5 minutes four times versus doing something once for 20 minutes is the same amount of time. But it almost seems in my head that like that wouldn't be the same.
Well, first of all, because one's possible and the other one's not.
Okay, fair.
Yeah. I mean, really what you're doing is, you know, your VO2 max, it's not a number. It's not like a certain wattage. It, like zone two, it's a condition.
It's a mindset.
It's a condition that your body gets into.
I was joking. The mindset thing was a joke.
Yeah. Oh, that was funny.
Hopefully someone at home laughed.
So what you really want to do is you're really just trying to, it's a way to maximize the more time your body is spending at that condition.
Okay. So my question a second ago, like, why does it work? It's just like spending time at that. You're just trying to accumulate as much time as possible there. And the most practical way to accomplish that is by chunking it.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Cause otherwise if you try to go 20 minutes for as hard as you could,
yeah,
you know, you might start out at VO2 max, but eventually you would fizzle down to something
right.
much lower intensity. And
right.
Yeah.
I get you. Okay. That makes sense.
It really makes it so we can efficiently spend more time at a certain power output.
Got it.
Okay, yeah, you're spending more time in zone, as you would say it.
Okay.
So there's some pros and cons, you know, to doing structured versus more organic intervals. One of the pros of doing the structured intervals is it can send a clearer adaptation signal.
Okay.
You know, because you're basically spending a lot of time doing your body's doing a very specific thing. it's not kind of like all over the place, up and down. It's, you know, you're working at this specific intensity, then you're resting, then you're working at the specific intensity. And in theory, that's going to send a really clear signal to adapt, to improve whatever systems were involved in producing that energy. We mentioned that you're going to spend more time in zone. You know, it's kind of surprising a lot of times when you go on like a hard workout or a race or a hard group ride, or you don't really spend as much time in certain zones as you think you would.
This is the thing that a lot of people say after they get a power meter and they start looking back at the files. You're kind of surprised by how little time you're truly spending at, you know, zone.
It really is interesting
to zone five.
To see.
Like, it feels like you're doing
it. It feels like you're doing a lot of hard work, but you're just more cognizant of hard work.
Yeah.
And you tend to tune out some of the easier stuff. And you,
right.
Yeah. Another really good advantage of doing structured workouts is that you tend to recover quicker from them.
Really?
And that's because, you know, really the magic of intervals is the recovery.
Yeah.
You know, and like intervals versus like a hard group ride, you're doing in the hard group ride or the race, you're doing the hard efforts. Between the hard efforts, you're doing kind of hard efforts.
Right.
And so you're really kind of getting a lot of stress, but you're not getting a lot of the really, really high quality stress. And when you're doing like the structured intervals, you'll do the hard work, but then the rest is such high quality that when you're done, the overall stress isn't really as bad.
So the bang for your buck is really good.
You tend to recover quicker from them.
Okay.
In general. And like I said, it's really the magic of structured intervals really is the rest.
Yeah.
You know, and that's probably the one thing that separates them from like a hard group ride or practice races or something.
And I will say from personal experience, like structured intervals have not been a big part of my riding for a long time. I can tell you that like I have no notable race results to write home about. I have not done anything of particular note in a race in a long, 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 long time. And I'm tired all the time because I'm kind of doing the opposite, because that's not where my head and my heart is for riding right now. But I can tell you that like I was actually remarking the other day, I'm like, wow, for how tired I am all the time, I'm not very fast. And so like intervals are kind of a way to, you know, like, if you could be, in theory, I guess if I was as tired as I am now from doing the intervals, I would be a whole lot faster. So,
or if your hard workouts were more structured, you might be less tired. And then if your easy rides were easier, you'd be even less tired.
And there's maybe someone out here who needs to be like, oh, well, hey, I really want to be good. And I feel like I'm working really hard. If you're kind of doing the Joe Draper method where you're just kind of randomly doing whatever strikes your fancy, which a lot of people kind of get into this and that's what they do, right?
You're doing like hard rides mixed with kind of hard rides.
Yeah. And it's like, you can make yourself really, really tired without actually getting very far.
Yeah. So those are the pros of the more structured type intervals. There are some disadvantages, some cons.
Mm.
Sometimes they can tend to be unnecessarily complicated.
Yes.
And confusing, and people get kind of hung up on the details. And
there's the clickbaity YouTube and, GCN bicycling magazine, like this one magic interval set.
And they
that
think
will,
if you don't follow the steps perfectly, you're missing out on, you're not unlocking your genetic potential.
I think it's people who unwittingly have this sort of moralistic, mystical outlook on the universe that like, if I suffer a lot, I will get better. And if I do this, then I'll magic. I'm like, that's not, your body doesn't work that way. You know, it's not the.
But I think some part of the reason they can be overly complicated, and this isn't a bad reason, I think a lot of times it's just more entertaining.
Yeah. Swift has kind of mastered this with their
like Swift and Trainer Road and stuff, you know. Their workouts are complex, but they're designed to be done on trainers.
And it's pretty soul crushing. Like if you wanted to get like secrets out of someone, you'd stick them on a trainer and do like 90s style interval training where it's just the same thing again and again and again on a trainer. Like that gets really old really fast.
I don't think complicated intervals are going to get you better adaptations.
No.
In fact, I think the opposite.
Yeah.
But I do think that they can be more motivating and entertaining.
Sure.
So that's
if you're that kind of person and you need that, then
They're not horrible. And some people don't like doing structured work.
Yeah.
It can be a little tedious sometimes.
Yep.
But I also do think that it can be hard to execute. And I don't think that most people execute them well enough. We'll talk about that a little later.
Okay.
And some people just don't think it's fun. Some people think it's, and it probably is less fun for sure than,
yeah,
than organic workouts.
Right.
So let's talk about organic key workouts.
Okay.
And you can probably guess what this is, what I'm referring to, right?
Right.
You know, these are going to be like hard group rides. Like Bart Gillespie likes to do hot laps with kids.
Yep.
Which is just brilliant.
I was like, if Bart Gillespie's doing it, it's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing.
That's a good rule of thumb.
And then just like races, like each race you do, you're going to, and after you recover from it, you're probably going to get a little bump in fitness that's going to add up over time.
Yeah.
So these, the advantage of these type of workouts is, well, they're typically more fun.
Yes.
And a lot of times, I think, especially for most kids, it's easier to push hard.
Yes.
In these types of environments.
Yes.
Which is definitely a plus.
And I'll throw out too, if you only ever did structured intervals, especially if you're like just doing structured intervals on a trainer, there would be something to be said for like the optimization of the amount of time you're getting in zone or whatever. But like, if you're lining up against kids who actually ride outdoors and are like, there's something to be said for like the psychological preparedness of kind of random difficulty and of kind of like in the moment being like, oh, okay, now it's hard. And it's hard now because someone else decided that they're going to go. So now I need to be ready to go. Instead of like, well, the timer, I have 16 seconds, you know, like, there's, as with all things, optimization is this elusive beast we'll never actually capture and photograph. And it's really more like there's some amount of blending depending on who you are and where you're trying to go. Mm-hmm. So we should say this is not like a hit on organic hard efforts at all, right? Like that's not,
they are both good and there's a time and place for, and I think you should do both.
Yes,
absolutely. Another advantage of organic is they're very specific.
Yeah.
You know, like if you went to your race course and did hot laps on the course you're going to be racing on.
Oh yeah. That's great.
Yeah. Like how do you get more specific than that?
The pros do this in the lead up to Milan San Remo. You have, there's videos everywhere of randos who are like, oh look, here goes Tadej Pogačar and Mathieu van der Poel on the Poggio, you know, like, the pros do this. The pros will spend a week at the race venue beforehand doing this. Like it's a thing.
And I mean, and the issues or the cons with the more organic style intervals are going to be, it'd probably take longer to recovery. Like that was really bad grammar.
Take longer to recoveries. Yes.
Yes.
We understood. Don't worry.
You know what I meant?
That's okay.
Yeah. Recovery is going to take longer typically. And that's because that you don't, you know, the recovery intervals during those organic hard workouts might not be as complete.
Yeah.
You know, and you're kind of sending less clear signals. You know, you're doing some like VO2 efforts, some anaerobic efforts, some tempo efforts.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it might send less clear signals for adaptation, but being able to use all the energy systems in certain workouts too.
Yeah.
Is also valuable.
Yeah. So, and like I said, I think there's something you've said for the psychological preparedness too. So
yeah, I mean, obviously going to spend less time in zone.
It's less, but maybe lower purity, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. Right.
But the fact of the matter is whatever is going to motivate you the best and push you the hardest and get it so your heart rate's near its max and you're breathing almost gasping for air is probably going to be better, you know?
Yeah.
So, well, obviously we suggest doing both, incorporating both.
Yep.
There's time and place for both of it. And I wouldn't do one or the other exclusively. So
just to throw this episode into turmoil again, I am curious. I'm going to ask the clickbaity question. What's the best interval, right? Because you said there are a million, one of them's got to be the best, right? Is there the magic silver bullet one that I'm going to do and then I'm going to beat Nino or?
Well, I'm glad you asked this question. Because
Dan asked me off camera to ask this question in case you couldn't tell. I did a really good job making that look pretty natural. And you're like, nah, screw that. We're just going to throw away all of Joe's hard work. Don't ask how often this happens. I promise all of my good questions are definitely organic and not planted.
So,
mm-hmm.
So to answer your question.
To answer whose question?
Okay. In terms of like, I don't think there's ever been, in terms of like building fitness and in terms of engine
in terms
building,
of like answering the question, where are we going to land on this? Are you going to actually, you've said in terms of three times. Could you like stick the landing, please?
Okay. The answer is it depends. Okay. But in terms of like engine building and improving our fitness and so forth, I don't think there's a clear study out there that really shows one type of interval is better than the others.
Well, because every bike race is different, right? Like every, unless, right?
Well, I'm even talking about just
for improving your FTP?
Improving fitness in general.
Okay. Every person's different.
Not enough evidence suggesting that any one interval is better than others, you know?
Are they all kind of the same then? Is it just time and zone?
Well, it depends on a lot of things.
Okay.
You know, and they're real, I mean, in certain circumstances, like something could work well for one person, but not for another. And there's different needs and lots of considerations. Yeah. But in general, there's really not miracle intervals. And we'll talk a little bit about like today, just kind of deciding how to decide what to do when and so forth. But, as far as engine building goes, you know, we've talked before about PGC1 alpha, which is the gene that determines how robust our mitochondria are.
I thought it was that robot from Star Wars. That was a mildly funny joke. You're welcome.
It was really funny. And, you know, and we've talked before about how one of the strongest ways to activate this gene is through zone 2 and kind of the moderate intensity type work, the easy to moderate intensity work. Also like VO2 max work, a really high intensity work stimulates it as well, but it does it through a completely different pathway. So ultimately when it comes to the mitochondria side, there's different ways to improve that, and both are necessary. And I think that's pretty well established that we need to do large amounts of zone 2, and we also need to include intensity. And anyone that says one or the other's more important is off, really. You really just have to include both.
No simple answers. It's some indeterminate mix of different things, right?
But as far as that intensity goes, it can look a lot of different ways. I mean, and ultimately, from my understanding is really, you know, if it's above your threshold, it's more about how well it's executed rather than the exact prescription in terms of fitness building.
Let me know if I'm translating this right. We say in the execution, like, even if you're, regardless of what specific type of interval you're choosing, not actually hitting your target power because you went 30% too hard on the first one and then you're 20% below on all the others because you're tired. Is that what you mean? Like the quality and making sure you're actually accumulating the time and zone. That's what you meant by that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
The basically like operating near your VO2 max is really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of workouts that we do, we will get there a little bit, but not really spend a whole lot of time there.
Cause it sucks. It's not like riding. We've said before riding, like I love riding kind of hard. Riding kind of hard is fun. Actually hitting VO2 is not fun. Like you are not going, I think of most people probably aren't going to do it very often unless they're forcing themselves to in a structured way, which is kind of the magic of structured intervals, right?
Yeah. So I know we're talking about intervals, but I told you we were going to mention zone 2 a little bit because the two just kind of have to go together.
We're shills for zone 2. We're in the pocket of big zone 2.
Well, but zone 2 isn't really that effective without combining it with the appropriate amount of high intensity too. So you really, if you're just doing one or the other, your fitness is going to be really limited. So in terms of just simple, basic engine building, and we've talked about this a lot, it's just polarized training. The majority of your work is going to be at a relatively easy zone 2, but then roughly around 2 workouts a week, probably less for older people, occasionally more for younger people. It needs to be above our threshold, somewhere between our threshold and VO2 max, which is about 90% of your max heart rate. So it's really, really hard, really, really uncomfortable. And there's a, but there's within those parameters, there's just so many options and so many different ways to do it. And it's kind of hard to know, you know, to know which way is the best. But like I said, it's all about how well you're executing and how well you're actually like pushing yourself into some of those areas. And there's a lot of good tools out there to help make this easier. I do think occasionally, sometimes these tools hold us back a little bit. And I will talk about that in a little bit, but I do think that maybe for a lot of kids, the more organic style might help them push their limits a little better than some of the more structured style.
Oh, interesting. But okay.
It really depends.
Maybe we're kind of like sifting through your notes there. Like, I do think that like different personalities, I think some people just have a personality where they love the structure and the structure is good for them. I think I do think there's a certain type of kid where I wouldn't try to ram structured intervals down their throat from the parents listening. Like, I don't know. Like, it always seemed like Jacob, the Draper brother, the elusive one that no one ever sees. He's like a cryptid. It kind of seemed like he didn't really respond well to it, and he was the best version of him with less of that in the mix. So it is probably the personal aspect of that too, right?
Yeah. And that's the whole thing I'm saying. There's a whole bunch of different ways to do this, but it really kind of differs from person to person what's going to be best for you as an individual.
Yeah.
And I just don't think there's a way that you could come out and say as a blanket statement which is really the best, you know, because it really becomes individual. And
as with all things, be suspicious of simple answers, right?
Yeah. So here's a question, and okay. I won't try to fake it and have you ask it.
Okay.
I'll just ask
sure.
it. Okay. Because I thought that was going to flow better than it did.
Okay. I came through on my part. I don't know about you.
So now that we're kind of in the race season, well, let me back up a little bit. One thing about zone two and intervals is like, as the season advances and progresses, we kind of like, they're both important throughout the whole season, but the emphasis kind of shifts, you know,
right.
when you're in the base season, like some intensity is fine,
yeah,
but it's not the focus.
No,
really the more zone two kind of base building's the focus. When it shifts more to like race season, then intensity kind of becomes the focus. And I've had a lot of people kind of wonder, like, why would you continue to do zone two during the race season if we're not racing at zone two?
Yep.
And, you know, why is that important once race season starts?
So Dan, once race season starts, why is it important to do zone two? Because it's not like you're racing in zone two, right?
Okay, good. Thanks for asking.
You're welcome.
So I think the short answer is really because we're limited in the amount of intensity we can do each week.
Oh, okay. So basically like and kind of going back to the thing again, where like you couldn't do this if you can do it 4 to 5 times a week, you're not doing it right. So that's going to leave, you know, where we say 2 times a week, it's kind of your guideline. You don't think that, you know, Hunter and all these other guys winning races are just riding 2 days a week through the Nike season, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
But basically your other time has to be something. And it would be dumb to fill that time with like, you know, zone three, cause that's an additional like recovery, you know, debt that you're going to throw yourself into. So what else would you do?
Yeah.
Is that kind of the,
absolutely. Okay. So right now, really we're getting our most bang for the buck from our key workouts and our intervals. But we really can't.
You'd be leaving fitness on the table by only leaving twice a week.
Exactly.
There's fitness to be had, but you want to get the best.
Yeah. But if you only did like 2 hard workouts a week and didn't ride the other days, you would lose a lot of fitness. If you tried to do intervals 5 days a week, they would be poor quality and you'd overtrain and burn out quickly.
Yep.
So really you need to maintain your zone two throughout the season, but it becomes less of a focus. Like,
okay.
You know, you could certainly make these rides shorter. You know, if you've been doing 3-hour zone two rides through the summer, two is probably sufficient now and so forth, you know? So basically if you just cut out the zone two and only did your high intensity intervals, you would lose fitness and perhaps even peak early, and the quality of your season would dwindle as you go.
Okay.
So yeah.
I will say, this is a nice time of year to be doing some zone two. Like, the fall colors are going to start, especially if we get later in the Nike season. That shouldn't be a chore. Going out and doing a zone two ride in a beautiful place is,
well,
like...
I noticed looking at Strava this last weekend, some of our top riders all did really big rides this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, it seems like it's working for them.
You don't need to be, like, afraid to do other long rides and stuff, but not the emphasis, right?
So keep doing your zone two. The thing is, if your zone two is making you tired and is affecting the quality of your other workouts, you're either doing it too hard or too long. So kind of keep that in mind. But it is still important. Keep it up throughout the season. So as far as like deciding what's best to do for key workouts, we've talked a lot in the past just about engine building.
Right.
You know, and we've talked also about specificity. And, you know, where you kind of pick intervals that are going to mimic your event. As far as engine building goes, in my opinion, the best way for engine building would be, for the most part, lots of zone two. And then as far as your hard workouts, build up to like longer VO2 max intervals. In my opinion, that's probably the best for engine building. Hard to execute for a lot of people. You know, when you consider, like, so that's kind of the first thing. Specificity, we've talked about that a lot. That's where you would kind of gear your intervals to, as closely as possible, mimic aspects of your key events that would be beneficial. You know, it's like if there's an 8-minute climb in your race that's pretty decisive, you do a lot of workouts that got you good riding hard for 8 minutes, kind of thing. So we've talked a lot about specificity. Do you remember talking about residuals at all?
I remember it coming up.
Yeah. Residuals is basically just the theory that, like, the type of, like, the more intense the fitness is, the more intense the workout is, the quicker you adapt to it and the quicker you lose it.
Your top end sprint power comes and goes pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Your ability to ride at your zone two just comes slower, but stays longer.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're following that logic, then you would do kind of longer intervals earlier in the season.
Right.
And focus on shorter intervals later in the season.
Right.
So that's another consideration. So those are the three considerations we've talked a lot about in the past, but today I kind of wanted to talk about other considerations that are worth thinking about that might be kind of fun to discuss. And I don't know if you've heard of the term gap analysis, but
I have friends. I don't know.
Basically what
that
is,
shot. I'm sorry. I don't know.
That's a term where you kind of like analyze where you're at now versus where you would like to be. And you kind of decide
what's in between those and
what needs to take place in between to get where you need to go. And, you know, and this gap analysis could be short term or long term. You know, there's some things you need to address that might take a long time, and other things you can address pretty quickly, you know, but you kind of looking at where you're at, where you'd like to be, and just kind of figure out some things you need to work on to get there. And as part of gap analysis is when you consider like your weaknesses. And the thing with weaknesses is not all weaknesses really need to be addressed, because when you're looking at your weaknesses, you need to decide, are these weaknesses limiters?
Okay.
You know, so what do you think I might mean by that?
So I would throw out, we had some interesting training philosophies that were applied at Skyline back in my day. And we spent a lot of time doing ridiculous standing start intervals in your hardest gear. And I didn't have a power meter. I really am thinking I was messing around in the 1700 to 1800 watt sprint zone. I had a really good sprint. didn't help me a whole lot in Nika. Like, I think in at least for the kind of racing I was doing, it was kind of like, you know, like, I think if you were lacking an amazing, you know, 1500 watt sprint, that's not going to hold you back in Nika. I was really lacking, like, you know, any effort longer than 3 minutes was really, really hard for me. And that was hugely limiting in Nika. So like, there's some cycling skills that might be relevant, or not even just like some specific types of fitness that might be relevant for someone in some situation, but you don't necessarily need that. And on the flip side, maybe if you're looking to do race across America and you would love to be able to put out some really cool power for 15 hours at a time, that's not super relevant to Nika either. Am I on the right track? Or am I just like blowing hot air here?
No, absolutely. Like for instance, you might not be good at 1.5 hour climbs.
Okay. Yeah. Great example. Yeah.
But that might not be your thing, but that's not going to hold you back at Nika.
Right.
You might be bad at 3 minute climbs.
That will hold you back.
That will hold you back at Nika. Yeah. So yeah, it's like, we're all going to have weaknesses, but we need to make sure that our weaknesses are actually also limiters.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what we're going to talk about, is like addressing limiters and,
right,
and can we address them and how do we address them? And I like to think of a limiter is like an analogy I thought of is like, say you're remodeling a bathroom and you take the Saturday off, you're remodeling the bathroom and you get to a point and you're like installing the faucet and you realize you don't have a hose to hook the faucet up to the wall. And like,
you're like, where'd a hose at? And how dumb was that? Okay. No, coach, carry on. Let's play.
And you're like, oh great, this is holding me back from finishing the job. I've got to go run to Home Depot, buy the hose to finish installing the faucet.
Right.
That hose was limiting, was a limiter, you know?
Right.
And going to Home Depot, buying it, putting it in, you're addressing the limiter. And that's kind of,
yeah. Okay.
So that's kind of what I was thinking, like limiters, like something that if you're able to kind of fix this one thing, it could help improve your race results. And yeah.
So maybe someone who's like, dude, you know what? I'm great at those longer efforts, but holy smokes, every single start I'm starting on the front row and ending up in 32nd place. And I'm spending the whole race working back. Like that would be
me right there.
Right. And that's something, that's your limiter.
If I wanted to, I could improve.
Right. But for me, I found that like, if someone's like, oh man, you know, Joe can do 1700 watts at a sprint. I'm like, it's not that helpful, to be totally honest with you. Like, it just doesn't come up all that. I had like one sprint finish in Nika ever. And I absolutely roasted that kid and beat him for 12th place. Like, it didn't matter. Like, it was like, you know, that kid was like, where the heck did this guy in outside of the top 10 get a sprint like that? Wow. What a weird skill for you to have.
And that's why I don't really work on sprints a whole lot. Maybe I should.
Yeah.
But I kind of figure some people just kind of got it. And
yeah, like it's not like a crit finish in Nika. Like I should say, sprinting is relevant to Nika.
But it happens, like, for sure.
It happens. It's actually less relevant than you'd think. Yeah. Am I crazy in saying that?
No.
Yeah.
So you know, and like, I mean, I think you should practice it every once in a while.
Like you could not predict who's going to win a Nika race by the max sprint power.
Exactly. Yeah. What I said. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's a limiter. It's a nice skill to have, it's definitely not a limiter.
Yeah.
Thing with limiters that makes them tricky is they can be hard to identify. Like, I think the challenge is like a lot of people think, oh, you know, I do fine in the race till we get to the climb. And then I fall apart on the 3 minute climb.
Yeah.
I'm bad at 3 minute climbs.
Yeah.
I'm going to start training 3 minute climbs all the time.
Sure.
And that seems pretty intuitive.
Yeah.
But it can kind of be hard sometimes to identify the limiter, because a lot of time, like in that case, the limiter could be that your base was insufficient.
That's, and you were just so tired by the time you got that fresh, like, you can do a 3 minute climb.
Like
just
you were
fine.
Racing in zone 4, the guy you were racing in was in zone 3.
This is kind of how Pogacar, I think, is the best, because his zone 2 is probably the highest in the world. That he's just not going that hard most of the time. So when it really counts, you know, and like, I think this is why you see some people like him can beat a Van der Poel or a Van Aert in a flatter race, just by virtue of the fact that he hasn't had to go as hard all day because his zone 2 is so freakishly high.
So yeah, so that can be, that can be a limiter, but it's not like really obvious.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it can even be like like strength sometimes could be potentially a limiter. You, like, you might need to spend more time in the gym. You might need to work to just improve your VO2 max, you know, like those are just some kind of like your engine that you've built could possibly be part of the limiter,
right?
You know, another limiter can be physics.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that you really can't address much. But
I really don't think that's that relevant to NICA, to be totally. I think
the
only time that comes up in NICA is if you're a late bloomer and you're like racing at an Eagle Mountain or what would it be like a what's the flattest NICA? It's like Vernal, Eagle Mountain, like those. If you're just barely breaking 100 pounds, like there's other people who just have more weight to throw at the pedals, and that's a thing. When you get older, like if you're really interested in winning like the big Cottonwood Hill climb, there's a certain body type that's going to be conducive to that. I spent way too much time thinking about that in NICA. There were some Anders Johnson was in NICA right before I was. He had the fastest time on the Snow Basin climb for a while, and he's massive, right? Yeah. Like in NICA, it's really
more about the strength.
Yeah, unless
you're
kind of in that situation where you're the late bloomer, maybe in a flat race that can come in, it's a big deal in road cycling. It's really not that big.
I was just kind of listing some caveats to limiters.
Sure.
But
yeah, it's not always.
I think a lot of times what limiters are, though, for us is they're just things that we neglect because...
it's funner to do what you're good at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You know,
how many times have I asked you to do a cross race? I'm doing point-to-point for the second time on Saturday. How many cross races have you done?
Like zero, just because I would be so bad.
Hmm.
You know, but again, I could be so much better at that type of stuff if I decided that I wanted to invest some time and some training into it, you know, and that's the kind of limiters we're talking about today. Like things that you've got potential for, but you're just not tapping it because you're spending your time elsewhere.
Yep.
You know, and cause we just kind of tend to gravitate towards things that we enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And we tend to avoid things that we're not as good at. And the one thing is like our strengths might be our strengths because we're close to our potential at them.
Yeah.
But really weaknesses are kind of cool.
Yeah.
Because weaknesses are really just like opportunity.
I also want to throw out like all these good riders. You're talking about like Hunter and Calvin and Riker and Emma and Zoe and the twin, like, they're all very complete riders. Like you can't point to any like what is Hunter's weakness? I don't think he has one. He's a really, and it's like, that's kind of true of in mountain biking, at least they're all very well-rounded. There's it's very rare these days that you see like, you know, in the cross country scene that you see someone where it used to be like, oh, well this guy, he's a great, like Absalon's a good climber, but man, it's just like, if you want to be on the top, you kind of have to be good at everything these days. Like all aroundedness is hard because it's easier to chase the stuff that you're good at, but all aroundedness is also kind of winning races right now. So if you're interested in doing that, you have to hop on the train and do some stuff that you're not the best at.
I mean, I think of myself and I am really good at one very specific type of ride.
Yeah. And what kind of ride do you do all the time?
And that's kind of what I do all the time. And like I go ride with like an Andrew Preston or something or Brady or whatever. Yeah. And like,
say bye to him in the parking lot.
Well, yeah, it's not just like when you get to a steep climb, they're better than me or it's like the descending and everything, you know? And I'm like, I just realized, gosh, I've got a lot of weaknesses that if I put a little emphasis in them, I could be a better rider.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, and I don't think it's that like base is my problem. You know, I threw that out as a caveat because I think I've got plenty of base.
Yep.
I think that's my problem is that's all I've got.
Yeah. He's all about that base.
Yeah.
Haha.
No trouble. So yeah, that's just kind of, like I think that we need to first of all think, okay, what are some of my weaknesses?
Yep.
And then ask, okay, is this a limiter?
Yep.
And the third thing, ask, okay, is this something that if I devoted some time specifically addressing this limiter, could I improve at it? Or is it something more in my engine that just needs to be worked on over a longer period of time?
Yeah.
And that may be the case. And,
yeah.
You know, but I think if you're someone that's been training consistently, throughout the winter, throughout the spring.
For like the varsity riders, like you've probably got a pretty good engine.
Yeah.
You know,
I think there might just be something out there that might need some work, even though it's not what you want to work on.
Yeah. Like look for something that's not obvious.
Yeah.
Right.
And I do want, I mean, one thing it could be, you know, it could even be skills too. It's not just,
oh yeah. We've totally left that out, 'cause it's been an interval episode. Skills are a huge one. That's a lot of free speed for a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. So just, you know,
be cognizant of this.
Yeah. Your weaknesses are opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, it's not fun. Focusing on your weaknesses isn't fun, but if you want to win some races, especially with just how competitive it is these days.
Well, it's definitely going to help, but I really do think this is something I'm a good example of, because I've really gravitated towards what I enjoy.
Good example or a bad example?
A good example of a bad example, I guess.
Okay.
Example of what we're concerned with, I guess, is what I was trying to say. But yeah, I mean, I just know for myself, if there are certain types of efforts I focus more on, I could really improve, you know, and it would, if I was, had any cross country races coming up, it definitely make a difference. So
there you go.
Yeah.
So with all this in mind, I guess takeaway is we're in the Nike season, the end of the season for most people. Your key workouts are key, about 2 a week. Maximize your time, play around in that crappy VO2 max zone that's not fun to be in.
Which is kind of one of the things I wanted to get across through this, is I think most people do, like most riders, at least the Skyline riders I do intervals with, I think they do them hard, but I don't think they're really pushing quite hard enough. You know, I think, for instance, the other day I was going to go ride Big Mountain. I was driving up Little Cottonwood Canyon and I did see Hunter Cottom doing intervals.
I saw him up Little doing intervals the other day.
You saw him too.
Yeah, I saw him.
And I guess that's where he does his intervals, but I'll be honest, it was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And he was, I drove past him when he was doing like a rest interval. I could tell he was trying to rest, and he just looked shattered.
Yeah.
And it was actually pretty impressive, and it kind of explained a lot to me, really.
Yeah.
Because like when I do like intervals with a lot of the Skyline kids and stuff, I don't ever see them
shattered
like that. I see them pushing, but you know, I think that maybe we aren't pushing quite as hard as we need to.
Yeah. Cause there's like fun hard. And if you're into this, you're like, if you're an endurance athlete, there's some version of hard that's enjoyable to you and that's fun. Like this shouldn't be fun. You shouldn't look forward to these rides. It should be. I do want to say on the flip side, I also struggled with intervals because like I didn't have power. And I think most people listening to this don't, you know, still like power is something, you know, and like I would go too hard. I would do one or two intervals that were so hard that I couldn't do it anymore. And this is kind of the paradox of like, this is why we don't preach the whole like, you know, like Instagram influencer fitness bro thing where it's like, you just have to push deep enough. I'm like, oh, I'm fully confident. I have kids who can push deep enough that suddenly the sport isn't fun anymore and it doesn't make sense. Cause I kind of just went with like some of the Skyline intervals. It's like, that's not worth it. I don't care. Like this is, my life doesn't depend on this. I would have to be in a situation where my life depended on it to go to a place that dark again. And this is just nothing close to that. So I think depending on who you are, I think most kids probably aren't going to that place, but I do want to throw out for the few people like, you know, like to be like, well, to do these the way that you should, like Hunter is doing them hard enough that they are really, really hard, but he's also finishing the workout. And this is kind of the art of intervals, is finding out how
really
deep you can
kind
go.
Of art, because we're not asking you to go your hardest.
Yeah.
Because you could go your hardest for maybe 10 or 15 seconds.
Right. Yeah.
And then after that, you're doing something less than your, it's really kind of a tricky thing. And
yeah.
And I think it's really important that we know what they're supposed to feel like.
Right.
And I mean, and there's some tools out there, you know, and
power meters and heart rate monitors, are
you know,
thing,
I mean, and you know, and typically how it's done in the most common way, how it's done and how we monitor how hard these go is, you know, people take a 20-minute FTP test. Mm-hmm. They'll take 90% of that. They'll get their FTP. and that's like an estimate.
Yep.
And they plug that into their bike computer, their Training Peaks or whatever, Zwift, and there's, and that basically takes a percentage of that and divides it into your different zones. You know, and these zones are just, it's like your FTP is an estimate, and then the zones that it assigns
it's
you.
It's an equation.
Yeah, that's just like a percentage of that estimate. So it's kind of like an estimate based on an estimate.
What I said earlier, and that it depends on what your VO2 max is set at. This is kind of like your VO2 max isn't, it is what it is, but you don't really know exactly what it is. Most people, I say set at because it is set. Yeah, they don't know what it is.
Your zone five that this equation comes up with isn't your VO2 max.
Yeah.
You know, you'd really have to get that tested to actually, it's an oxygen cart or metabolic cart, but
what do I know?
You know, so even if you have some of these tools, you know, like say you've got a power meter and a bike computer and you've done like an FTP test, you know, you still have to know what these should feel like, you know, and those tools kind of do help you pace them. But, I honestly think sometimes it kind of holds kids back a little bit, because I know like a lot of kids that won't adjust their zones unless they retake their FTP test,
which is not how you should.
That's not how you should. In fact, I think technology is kind of going away from that a little bit. You know, I think that, a lot of the training software out there is just constantly checking how well you perform your intervals, and it adjusts your FTP accordingly. Because really, taking an FTP test, like if you took it like Monday versus Wednesday, it could be several points different based on how well you slept and what you ate. And
how
stuff,
much
you've been
on your feet that day.
And, you know, if you're going to have to take, I wasn't going to go this far into this, but here we are. You know, if you're going to have to retake an FTP test to adjust your zones, that I think that the fact that you think you need to take an FTP test indicates that you know that it's not set right, you know? Yeah. So I would suggest, you know, if you're doing this way, if workouts are feeling a little bit too manageable, you bump up your FTP.
Yeah.
You know, cause all your zones are based on that number, you know, and by moving it up a few points, it's going to make your workouts harder. And, you know, and if it's too hard and you can't complete them, that's another problem. Then, you need to kind of adjust it downwards and so forth, you know. But I think, you know, the hard workouts, the VO2 max type workouts, as we've said before, you know, your legs should be burning. Your heart rate should be really high, like close to max. And one of the best ways you can tell if you're near your VO2 max is if you're breathing really, really hard.
Yep.
Like you're just kind of like, you're just breathing super hard.
Yep.
And the other way to know is that how long you can hold that consistent output. And, you know, if you can only hold it for a minute, that's more of an anaerobic type effort. But if you can hold it for 3 to 5 minutes at a steady power, and by the time you're done, your legs are burning, gasping for air, heart rate's really high, you know.
Is one maybe final kind of crude question, what is the longest you could do one VO2 interval?
I think for 5 minutes, I say is really good.
So if your intervals are 5 minutes long, that's pretty long. Like these are relatively short intervals though. Right. Just as a final point of clarification.
I've heard of people that can do them for 8 minutes. I don't think that's really realistic.
Okay.
I think 3 to 8 minutes or 3 to 5 minutes.
Like a repeatable 5 minutes though?
Yeah. That you could
so
do
maybe
that.
Like you could do that. 8, but 5 is kind of the longest.
And 8, I think you're getting more into a threshold type interval.
Okay.
You know, and if you're doing them for 5 minutes, you could maybe do 3 to 5, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
But you know, 3 to 5 minutes, they're not the only, there's like 30-30s. There's a whole bunch of different ways to chop it up to get you to spend more time in zone. But the point is it should be hard. But then on the flip side, like I think a lot of these riders, like we've said before, making their easy rides a little bit too hard, yep. you know? So, but yeah, there we go. Right. I wasn't going to go that deep into that.
There we go.
There we go.
Fell off the ladder today. What is the, what's we, there's gotta be a good secret word that's, that goes with this. You always make me pick. Today's your day.
Let's do, we could do home improvement because of that analogy about fixing up a
home improvement. Okay. Home improvement or send Dan a PNG file of the Home Depot logo. Those are your two choices. Okay. Everyone ride safe. Best of luck to those of you competing. We will talk to you next week on the other side of Point to Point.
Okay.
All right. See you guys.